This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A University of Kentucky project based in West Kentucky called Trash to Tank aims to improve economic conditions in underdeveloped countries and help the environment. Taylor Inman from member station WKMS has more.
Jeffrey C. is an associate professor at the University of Kentucky's College of Engineering in Paducah. C. works with graduate student Chandidi Josie Jenga to bring mechanical processors to Uganda that convert plastic into fuel. C. says the family operating a processor in the capital city of Kampala is already seeing economic returns. He says the goal is to give families a reliable source of income while providing environmental benefits.
From an environmental perspective, we get waste plastic off the streets and divert it from going to a trash dump.
C says the fuel created by the processors can be used in place of diesel fuel and releases fewer greenhouse gases when it burns. The project was funded in part by local Rotary clubs in Paducah and Kampala. C's team is asking for an international Rotary Club grant to bring the project to more families in Uganda and other countries. I'm Taylor Inman in Murray.
Best practices for harm reduction programs call for flooding a community with clean hypodermic syringes. Research shows that in addition to reducing the incidence of bloodborne pathogens in the community, effectively run programs help remove potentially infectious syringes from the community. But some people say that wasn't happening in Charleston. Our health reporter, Kara Lofton, took a deep look into the shutdown of the state's largest harm reduction program in West Virginia. She spoke with Assistant News Director Glennis Board about what she found.
So, Kara, in your first report, you talked about how the number of discarded syringes people were finding in public places in Charleston began to explode. When did that happen, and what was the fallout?
So reports of needles found in public places in Charleston began to escalate about a year ago. In October of 2017, the Public Safety Office Metro 911 established a code for needle pickup calls to help the city accurately collect data on locations, numbers, and types of needles to be picked up. Let's listen to one of those calls.
Charleston Fire 408.
Hey, Metro. You got a needle pickup?
I appreciate it.
And that's going to be in the alleyway on the ground. There's kids out with...
Oh, okay. I'll go get it.
All right, Dan. Thank you.
In an interview, Mayor Danny Jones said that the city tried numerous times to complain about needle litter. But then-Health Officer Michael Brummage took issue with the assertion that the health department ignored these complaints. And he pointed to attempts to address it, such as the founding of the Statewide Harm Reduction Coalition. Here's what Brummage said.
One of the objectives was to offload the city of Charleston so that there would be other programs so we didn't have to distribute as many syringes from the city of Charleston and that they would be able to go closer to where they lived.
So it wasn't long until the city came up with this idea of retractable needles, right?
Yeah, that's right. So about a week after the Metro 911 established a pickup code, the city proposed running a pilot program with retractable needles. And those are needles that once you use them, they retract back into a plastic chamber. And the idea was that if the needles could only be used once, then the risk of needle stick injuries to the community and then first responders as well would be much reduced. At the time, then-Health Officer Brummage was all for the idea. Writing in an email to City Attorney Paul Ellis, he said basically that the limitations are acceptability and cost, and if they got support or donated supplies, that he was for a pilot with evaluation from outside researchers.
So did they find someone to donate?
Yeah, they did. The Charleston Fire Department found a retractable needle manufacturer willing to donate needles in exchange for data on how well they worked. And everyone appeared to be on board with the pilot starting in the spring of 2018.
But what you said appeared. What happened?
Well, as he mentioned in the email, Brummage got in communication with a researcher at Johns Hopkins who told him that retractable needles were unpopular among IV drug users. For one thing, they can only use them once. So if they run out of needles, then users sometimes revert back to sharing equipment. So because of this, in 2010, the National Harm Reduction Coalition issued a statement against auto-disable syringes, saying that they don't help control epidemics of HIV, hepatitis C, and other bloodborne viruses among people who inject drugs, which is the whole point of doing a needle exchange in the first place. So Brumage told me he had to make a decision.
So at that point, I was kind of in a bind since I told the city we would implement the retractable syringe program. But now I knew if we did, we'd actually be putting the public at risk.
So given the current recommended practices, Brumage and the Johns Hopkins researcher decided to reduce the pilot from everyone to about 10 to 12 people. In meeting minutes from a call, Brumage's staff appeared to confirm the new plan with the company that had agreed to donate the syringes. Brumage says he then thought the needle manufacturer told the city about the change.
I see. But no one did?
No, they didn't. So city officials say they felt blindsided several weeks later when they learned that the pilot program no longer included the entire patient population and instead just 10 to 12 people. Here's Danny Jones.
They refused retractable needles.
It was more complicated than that. But it honestly probably felt that way to the city due to the lack of or miscommunication, whatever you want to call it. And I mean, remember, law enforcement, emergency responders, and some members of the community were now expressing a lot of concern, and they felt like they had to do something. Danny Jones again.
I want to protect the public. I want to protect the law-abiding public.
So what did they end up doing?
In late March of this year, 2018, Police Chief Steve Cooper decided, as he was legally empowered to do, that among other things, only retractable needles may be lawfully distributed by the health department. Brumage again.
Basically directing the health department to adapt what appear to be from the medical literature dangerous and unethical practices.
But other experts say making a harm reduction program that fits the needs of the community takes a lot of compromise. Here's former Commissioner for Public Health, Rao Gupta.
Public health has never been and will never be about my way or your way. It will always be what's the best way to input science and marry that with art and put it into practice.
But they ended up suspending the program, right? I mean, are there plans to reopen it?
Yeah, they did suspend it, and no, there are no plans to reopen it. But from a public health perspective, harm reduction programs are still the best tool the city has to prevent the spread of needle-borne illnesses. The science is pretty strong on that. But politically, from both Danny Jones and Dr. Michael Brumage, the program is dead in the water.
Great. Well, that is fascinating information. And tomorrow we'll hear about a program in Fayette County that's trying to learn from what happened in Charleston, right?
That's right.
Great. Well, we'll look forward to that. Thanks very much, Kara.
Thank you.
That was our health reporter, Kara Lofton, speaking with Assistant News Director Glennis Board. Join us tomorrow to hear the next story in a series that explores stigma, politics, and the possible impacts of closing the state's largest harm reduction program. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:52. Slick roads are being reported around the state. Many minor vehicle accidents. Please allow some extra time for your commute this morning. Breezy and cold today with snow showers and freezing drizzle. Highs in the 20s and 30s. Snow showers possible overnight. Windy and cold with lows in the teens and 20s. Scattered snow showers tomorrow. Partial clearing in the afternoon with highs in the 30s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Dutch Miller Subaru in Charleston. Dutch Miller Automotive is proud to be dedicated to multiple community service initiatives and local charities. More about our team and the Subaru Love Promise at DutchMillerSubaru.com. Health officials across the country are tracking record-breaking rates of sexually transmitted disease. That includes a resurgence of diseases that had become rare, such as syphilis. Mary Meehan reports that as STD cases rise, public budgets to combat them are falling.
Matt Pryor is the spokesperson for the nonprofit National Coalition of STD Directors. They are the folks on the front lines. He says STDs are a public health crisis, especially in parts of Appalachia already struggling with an opioid epidemic.
You know, we're seeing a number and an increasing number of syphilis, and other STI outbreaks associated with the opioid crisis. And states that are particularly hard hit by the opioid crisis are often states that are particularly hard hit by the STD epidemic.
People between the ages of 15 and 25 have the highest rates of STDs. Pryor says he finds a recent report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention especially troubling. It showed a rise in infant deaths as more newborns contract syphilis from their mothers during birth. Pryor stresses that STDs, if diagnosed early, can be treated effectively. He ties a rising infant death toll to decreased funding for public health.
Essentially a failure of the public health system and a failure of our nation. We should not see mothers and children dying. Essentially very easily treatable, identifiable diseases.
So while STDs have increased by 30% in the last 5 years to reach an all-time high, the amount of federal money for prevention and education has consistently gone down since 2003. Pryor says that federal funding is critical for states like Kentucky, West Virginia, and Ohio.
The federal STD prevention line is the only STD prevention line or funding stream that these states have. So it's really the first and last line of defense.
Jim Thacker is the spokesperson for the Madison County Public Health Department. He says public health officials expect spikes in infectious disease, but the recent resurgence of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis is something different. Overall, the CDC reported 2.4 million new cases of those diseases in 2017. Thacker says a handful of cases in Madison County reflected a 300% jump in syphilis.
It's frightening any time that you see something come back that you thought we had under control.
Not only under control, but in the case of syphilis, essentially eradicated for more than 50 years. Thacker adds that discussing sexually transmitted disease makes people uncomfortable.
It's something that a lot of people don't want to talk about.
Thacker says part of the increase could be linked to a lack of fear of HIV among people born after the AIDS epidemic. That ineffective long-term birth control makes condom use seem less urgent to teens and young adults. Eastern Kentucky University student Priscilliana Kaywood is an exception to that trend.
I personally like to keep myself updated on all of that stuff. On my personal social media, I follow like the CDC and various health departments.
The infectious disease major and the daughter of a straight-talking nurse has been the friend. She's the one among her peers that friends turn to for information about STDs. It's a role she's played since middle school. She understands it's common for people to push their sexual boundaries, but that can have consequences.
Some people take extreme advantage of that and then just end up with a disease that they don't want or never intended to get because A, they didn't know, you know, all the facts, B, they just were careless.
Kaywood is also an intern at the Lexington Fayette County Health Department, where she sometimes assists with testing. She understands there can be a mental block to getting tested.
Sometimes you need to know the answer, but you don't want to know it.
But she says knowing can make all the difference when it comes to your sexual health. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Mary Meehan.
Ohio Valley Resource is a public media partnership covering the region's economic transition and is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and WEKU. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glenna Sport. I'm Teresa Wills.